Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Okay, page 18. Jiva brings about his own misfortune. The Jiva was imprisoned in the illusory energy, ephemeral kingdom of Maya, due to his turning away from Lord Krishna. Thus the conditioned soul has brought great misfortune upon himself. That misfortune is first and foremost his reluctance to serve the Lord. This is a very important point, is that we have to understand the element of being in illusion, and the misfortune that is there is simply our own. It's not coming from another source. The tendency is to try to blame it on another source because of not actually being the cause of the situation, right? The masculine principle is the environment, is the existence, right? So the creation is dependent upon the creator. So then what will happen is that actually the situations that you're in aren't technically created by the creation, right? They're made by the creator. Does that make sense? So, but the problem is because we're taking the role of the creator, right, as the controller and enjoyer. That means it puts us into the position where we make the situations we find ourselves in. Does that make sense? So then, but the natural feminine nature is that it's not us. We're not the one that actually is creating the environment. Right? The male is. So you get this dichotomy here is where the jiva, which is feminine by nature, then is trying to blame someone else for the situation they're in, right? Because of this inherent feminine nature of dependency. So therefore, we'll either blame, natural is obvious of the living entities because they're the ones we see our karmas coming through, right? And then, or some will, take it as far as blaming God, right? Or someone else, But it can't be us, right? Because technically we're the dependent. So when it comes to responsibility, we're the dependent. When it comes to what's going to happen and how it's going to happen, then we take the independent role. You understand? This is the problem. This is the illusion. This is where all our difficulty comes in, right? So this same principle will be there in the conditioned state, whether one is in a masculine form or feminine form, because it's inherent the jiva is feminine, though it will be exaggerated, more in those in the feminine form and a little bit less in those in the masculine form, right? In general, though you have individual cases, it's going to be very, very different, right? Because when you're performing karma, how does that work? Is you perform an activity. The result of that activity is something observable, right? So that means it's a situation in which you find yourself, right? Does that make sense? So that situation, that is the sambandha, right? That's the sankarshan element, right? Which is specifically the masculine environment. Does this make sense? Right? So then what's happening is by karma, we perform our activities due to our free will. The result comes in the form, in the future, of predestiny of a situation. But because we don't necessarily make that connection, which generally we never do, unless it was very obvious that we did a great job, then we are able to note it. But if it didn't work out that way, then we're going to blame it on someone else. So the situation is there, right, which is the masculine element. So therefore, as the feminine nature, we will blame someone else for it. Does that make sense? That's why it's so hard to accept actually one's karma. Because of this principle. Because inherently underlying is the dependency upon the Lord. But the reason that we get the reaction and it affects us so much is because we do claim the action. Right? We claim the action and the result of that action. Does that make sense? But the point is in any action, there are so many aspects of the reaction. Right? Because there'll be the specific item you're looking for, but that item comes in an environment. Right? You want a house. So you get the house, but the house sits on some dirt in a particular neighborhood, in a particular district, in a state, in a country, in a particular continent. You understand? So all that goes with it. Right? It's not just the house on its own. So it's not that something we get on our own, it only gets that. Does that make sense? So that's why then we may pick out the specific thing. Oh, I wanted this. Okay, I want the nice car. I got the nice car. And so then I'm thinking it's just the nice car, and whenever I want to use the nice car, then I get all the oohs and ahs about it, or I'm very comfortable in the car, or, you know, so many things that I, the reason why I endeavor to get the car. But the problem is the car has to drive down a road, right? You know, unless you got chitty chitty bang bang or something. But if you don't have that car, then you got to stick to the road. Right? Unless, of course, it's one of these new 4x4s, then you go out on your own, independent, as long as it doesn't go past 40 degrees, then you're fine. But other than that, then you got to stick to some rules. So in that, there's other people who have their nice car that they wanted to be out on the road. Right? And so there you are on the M25 stuck for 3 hours. Right? So that's the problem. So that doesn't come with it. You think I get the car, it's not going to have all those things. Right? You don't want those things. Get on the train. Right? It doesn't have any jams. It's just, it's inside the train is jammed, but it doesn't stop. Your car, you're there, comfortable, the AC's on, you got your music, but you're stuck in traffic for 3 hours. Does that make sense? So this is the problem. So we're going to blame someone else. Why did the government only make 3-lane, you know, I mean, whatever it is, a 6-lane highway? You know, that's stupid, right? You know, in America, out in the middle of the desert, they got 8 lanes. You know, so why would they make 6 lanes in the middle of the city? So we can blame them. But the point is the reason we're on there is because we have a car or we want to travel by car. Right? We made that endeavor. So we get the reaction. Does that make sense? Okay, so the difficulty comes is we're not necessarily using our full intelligence to understand how it's going to unfold. The second is that when it does unfold, anything wrong, it can't be us. Right? Anything good, of course, is us, but anything that's not good can't be us. So this is, all of this is symptomatic of the created. Right? Okay? So the only reason we're in that situation is because we're not identifying as the created, but the creator. Right? So identifying as the creator, that's then the problem. Right? So for the devotee who takes up the process of devotional service and seeing Krishna in everything and doing everything from the platform of Naishkarmya, then the situations one's in doesn't bother you because they're not yours. Does that make sense? You know, you're walking by, let's say you're walking through the airport and there's a family there and they got 3 kids and they're all screaming at once. And the parents are, you know, really working hard to put it all together, right? But you're walking by, it's not your situation. You just walk by and go, wow, they got some trouble, right? You know, but you just keep walking. Why? Because it's not your situation. Does that make sense? So the whole point is that whatever one's in, if it's not yours, it's not a problem. Right? You ever notice how when it comes to someone else's situation, it's always very easy with very clear vision to tell what to do. Right? But in your own situation, a little bit harder. Right? Because the sense of proprietorship. Does that make sense? So Krishna is not bothered by anything because technically the masculine principle, though they are the cause of the existence, there isn't the mentality of ownership. Right? Because ownership is not required for the independence or the identity or the independence of the masculine principle. Right? Krishna exists, whether he claims it or not. Does that make sense? But the feminine, the created, only exists if it's connected to the creator. So that sense of ownership is very important. Does that make sense? So that's why you get all this convoluted things of being independent but totally attached. Right? Being, you know, I do what I want, but one's dependent. You know, I'm free, I do what I want, I dress how I want. Yeah, go tell that to your punk friends. No, you dress just like your punk friends. You don't dress just how you like. You know? I mean, it's like I say, one of the ones that you could see is somebody who is, you know, more independent. Though it's still, you know, it's got its angle or trip. You had in the Avalon Ballroom, right? 66, Prabhupada is there. It's just hippies, right? And, if you know, a hippie, you have to go to, like, Salvation Army or something else to find clothes, right? You couldn't wear anything new or nice, right? It's got to be some old, funky thing, right? Then, at the door, then, all the hippies are trying to get in and all that. And then there's this whole kerfuffle happens. And everyone's attention turns to the door. And that is somebody saying about, well, he's got to have a ticket or this or that. There's this guy at the door in a suit, right? And then they say, oh, you know, the guy at the door didn't know. But then somebody else comes up and says, I forget, who was that guy? It wasn't Allen Ginsberg.
Alistair.
Yeah, Alistair, yeah.
He's the guy who synthesized LSD.
Yeah, he's the guy that created LSD, right? You know, because, you know, therefore he's a suit because he goes to university. But so he's like the biggest head of all of them, right? It means they are heads because he's a head, right? So, you know, they're in the... So then they all let him in, but he doesn't care. He's not there with the long hair and the look and that. He's there with his nice hair and his suit and everything like that, right? But he makes LSD that they're all taking, right? So... this whole thing of that one is independent, actually, it doesn't work. You know what I'm saying? Because even his position is dependent upon others recognizing him. Even though by dress and other things. Does this make sense? Right? So in other words, we're establishing here this point that Jiva brings about his own misfortune. There is no ifs, ands, or buts that it's anybody else. Right? If that's very clear... then you can work with this. Because then it all comes down to the proprietorship over your action. So that means if you work on the principle of naishkarmya, then you will never be misfortunate. Right? Yes?
Since we are so incapable, due to our conditioning, to have proper judgment towards our own self, we can give judgment for others on a daily basis.
Even that may not be very good. Every second you can come on. You know how many times the brahmacharis have worked out all the problems of the whole movement on the veranda at 10 o'clock at night?
So then we need good counsel, we need good friends, mentors, spiritual leaders.
Mm-hmm.
But what does a leader himself do? Because, like, you have kings, they have their administrative council, their kshatriya council, they have the vaishya council, they have the brahminical council. But because if the king is involved in the situation, or you can put it a spiritual leader or a GBC or a temple president, and he's personally very involved in the situation, that usually means he can see.
It'll be harder.
It's not his blind spot, so he can see because he's involved.
Mm-hmm.
So then who gives him the...
Who gives him? Well, you have other, because there's always others. You know, the leaders, there's always other leaders. There's always others who, I mean, at least there should be others that one, you know, has a close relationship with, you know, especially confidential, but at least a good friendship with. You know, so that doesn't necessarily depend upon the position. So depending upon what it is that one needs vision in, then one should have such people that one respects. So if it's administrative, managerial, that kind of practical, then it should be other people in that field that you respect that have that kind of understanding that you can discuss with, bounce things off. If it's spiritual, then there should be spiritual personalities that one like that. So the king always has, he has his ministers, then he has the Brahmins, and then if nothing else, he has the Rajguru, you know, that specifically is taking care of him. Because the ministers also, because of their position, will give something, because ultimately their responsibility is the king's. But the Rajguru, then, he can say things that no one else can, because he won't say it in the court, he'll say it in private. You know, and he's obviously senior. Like for in Ramachandra's, you know, kingdom, then Vishishta was the Rajguru. So if Vishishta says something, Dasarath's not going to complain. You know, like that. So you would always have that kind of an element. But otherwise, and the main thing is, as we see, is just the Sadhu Sangha.
But yeah. Who chooses the council? Like, for instance, in our situation, you have your friends and you have your checks and balances, but you know this person will be on the more liberal side, this person will be more on the traditional side. So depending on what you're looking for, you know, people are going to shop around. Or if you're a king or a president, you just have your team of yes men or of whatever you feel is suitable for your kind of purpose. So who is appointing the council?
The council. The king does, but the point is anybody who's smart doesn't pick yes men. He picks like-minded persons who are expert in those fields. Anyone who only elects yes men, then they're not actually a good manager. Because the whole point is like-mindedness is what is important, not that they have the same, fully the same perspective. But like-mindedness, they have the common goal, they have the common methods to get to that goal, so therefore then they can work. You know, like you see in this book on the, you know, an exaggerated example of, not exaggerated, but yeah, it would be a typical example, is that it's a discussion about the planets, right? So then, I think it's to do with Vikramaditya. So he had ministers, his nine ministers were actually, their natures were exact natures of the nine planets, even to the point where they physically had the looks that are attributed to that planet. You know, means just, you know, if they're supposed to be more burly or more skinny or taller or shorter or, you know, more red color or more this color, anything like that. And how they would talk would be also in that way, because the nine planets are the ones that execute everything. All the karakas of everything are all attributed to those planets. So he had, but the point is the nine planets are working on the principle of establishing what is your result under the modes of nature, under Maya, under the soul, super soul. So it all works very nicely, but their opinions may be very different. But their purpose is the same, therefore they themselves can help make those. So technically a king, when he applies advice, if it's something very monumental, he first discusses with each of his advisors separately, privately. Because then they'll fully speak, because in front of others they may not speak everything. Once he's actually understood what everybody's saying and all that, and basically come to an understanding, then he'll discuss it in the group, you know, to bring it to a higher dynamic. Because he'll say, between all, they're making this point. So now how can we get that point? Then it moves forward. So it's never that you go into a meeting cold. It doesn't exist in the Vedic. So this idea of people fly in from everywhere and they just start talking, then it doesn't work. Because you actually don't know what each one's feeling. And so technically that's what the chairman of the committee is supposed to do. So in the same light with the individual, he'll have so many persons like that, then he should discuss with them all like that, unless the area is not relevant to them or something. And then getting their opinions, then put that all together, then try to come to a conclusion. Like that. But that would take honesty, that would take sincerity. If not, then, you know, one will naturally surround oneself with not good advisors, and then one will not get good results. So it's just a matter of, but this idea that they should just be completely different and have nothing to do with each other, that's a concept by people who don't know how to manage. Like that. Bureaucrats come up with those ideas, but real managers will never have that idea. Because there's no group dynamic. Is that okay? That's why Rupa Goswami says one should associate with like-minded persons who you feel are more advanced than you. like that. So that's the rule. But more advanced, they can be equals, because one is more advanced in this area, someone more advanced in that area. It's not that they all across the board. If you have those across the border are more advanced, that's very nice. But if not, just someone's more advanced in this area or that area or something. And so from that, then you can get advice in these areas. Is that okay? Okay. So is this clear? This whole point is that we perform an activity because we have claim ownership over it. That means the result is ours. Therefore, we get the masculine result that comes is ours. But the problem is, as being feminine by nature, we don't really appreciate that. We would like the masculine element to be more sensitive to our needs, but unfortunately, we are the masculine principle in our feminine principle, existence. So it's a problem, So the actual point is because one is turned away from Krishna, one turns back to Krishna, all this goes away. Because then the point is why would Krishna want to make a situation that's unpleasant for his devotees? Does that make sense? It's not important. Like that. Because then in the pastimes, the interaction, the whole point is rasa. So unfortunate situations aren't necessarily important for rasa, right? Unless it just brings it out. Like Krishna, there's the forest fire, and then Krishna, swallows the forest fire, or the Kali is serpent, and that. But it enhances rasa and the relationship with Krishna. It doesn't take away from it. One doesn't lose faith, one gains faith. Right, so that's Krishna's arrangements. Our arrangements have a tendency is that if they go nice, great. If they don't go nice, then we have a problem. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. So, okay. So he says here, that misfortune is first and foremost is reluctance to serve the Lord. So turning away, we're reluctant to serve. That means if we can see Krishna in everything, and in connection with everything that we do, then there's no problem. There's no misfortune. Does that make sense? That's the situation. Okay, so continuing. Unyavi lashita means the base material desires, which, when engaged in the karma and jnana process, lead to different levels of material enjoyments. Okay. Thus, his base desire for sense gratification, karma and jnana, have deluded the jiva into forgetting his real swarup, transcendental identity. They have propelled him into a whirlpool of misery. Okay, so back to this principle that we were discussing before is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the example of the 64 items of devotional service. Right? That is the base. That is devotional service. It's executed through these 64 forms. Now, that can be done with the mentality of Vaidhi or the mentality of Rag. But it's the same activities. Does that make sense? Right? So in the same way is that you have the base material desire of wanting to be the controller and enjoyer. Now, that base material desire, then when it's applied on karma or on jnana, right, then it gives different kinds of enjoyments. You get different results. Does that make sense? But it's still that base principle of I'm the controller and enjoyer. That is that base enjoyment. Then from there, then now we're in karma, now we're in jnana. Does that make sense? And in this one, we only use two, then yoga is included in karma, right? Because the results of karma, yoga is then siddhis and stuff. So it's considered a more refined form of karma, right? Sometimes it says karma, jnana, and yoga, right? Then you're separating that off just to make it very clear. If it doesn't say, if it's only karma and jnana, then it's meaning that the karma is included in, the yoga is included in karma, okay? Just for definitions. Okay, so it's this, when he's applying this base thing on this karma and jnana, that's what then puts him into all these situations. Right? Under the spell of Anyabhi Lashita, he is intoxicated by immediate sensual pleasures. pious activities goad him to yearn for heavenly pleasures. His enjoyment of matter leads to frustration, and so he becomes engrossed in striving to realize the impersonal, non-differentiated Brahman. So, okay. So there's immediate sense pleasures. He's engaging in this. That will delude him, right? He's intoxicated. That's why there's regulation in the Vedic process, right? Because if you don't regulate something, the delusion is greater. You regulate something, the delusion is reduced, right? Because immediately you're throwing it from spontaneous material attraction and attachment into regulated material attraction and attachment. As soon as you regulate it, the sense of vaiti comes in. And that sense of vaiti slows one down. One has to be very practiced to come to the spontaneous platform, right? So in that vaiti element of material engagement, one is able to contemplate. Does that make sense? That's why there's regulation. Otherwise, he becomes intoxicated by the immediate results. So even he follows the Vedic, he'll get better results, right? As Prabhupada was saying in the purport. You get better results than if you don't use it. But you still have to be very careful to not become intoxicated by those results. Right? Those results are for Krishna. Right? You get to be part of it. Right? You know, just like the caterers at a big party, they get to enjoy the ambience of the party. They even get to eat the food. But they can't claim it's my food and I can sit here and enjoy the party. They can't do that. You understand? They're just there to serve and assist in the party. But because they see everybody, see people at the party, they're worried about their own pleasure or the immediate pleasure. But someone who's serving at the party sees those parties' pleasure. Does that make sense? So it's something higher. Right? This element of the emotional platform as being a higher element of enjoyment is something that is not necessarily appreciated. Right? Because it's brought down to sensual. Because basically you sell most things by the sensual element. Right? The prestige and that. Some elements you use the emotional, but you'll drop it down to social prestige and other things like that. Right? Very rare is it brought about by purely just relationship with another person. Right? One or two. Kodak sometimes pulls it off. Sometimes maybe they can sell some, you know, baby diapers that way. You know, a few things that they'll have some ads that really deal with just a relationship with someone. So you want the best. You want them to be safe. You want those kind of things. Does that make sense? But otherwise, generally they're going for sense gratification, extended sense gratification. And so because of that, then one becomes so accustomed that one doesn't actually realize that the emotional is a higher platform of enjoyment. Right? Because it's not known it's there. I would say that many people in the very, you know, modern culture who would consider themselves on a very, you know, upbeat culture, very contemporary, cutting-edge culture, they probably don't even know about emotions. I mean, they're emotional. They'll be angry, this, that. But actual emotions between people, shared by people, they don't really know about it. It's talked about. It's, you know, a few things are said. Stuff, but it never goes deep. It remains very shallow. And then these people are put forward in the front as the icons, you know, your celebrities and other great personalities like this. Then, so what does the common man, will he know actually about emotion? Right? It's just getting in the way of the sense gratification that's projected by those who are supposedly doing better in your field of activity. Does this make sense? Right? Okay. So we can see that underlying this, Then when that goes a problem, then he wants to, because of that, what we discussed before, it's someone else's problem. So he just wants to throw it all out. Why would he throw it out if, you know, but because he, if it was yours, why would you throw it out? Right? But the thing is, it's thrown out because technically you don't think it's yours. You claim it's yours, but you actually think it's someone else because the bad situations are all created by someone else. So therefore you throw it out. So then there is no relationships, no variety, no form, nothing, right? Then you go for the impersonal, Brahman. Does that make sense? Like that. So we can see it still is all coming back to this basic principle of not understanding our position. Right. Continuing. The jiva's own eternal desire is to engage in Lord Krishna's service. But the residue of the practice of these three paths has smothered his proclivity and hidden his good fortune. Now he is caught up in the endless pursuit of religiosity, material wealth, and sense gratification. Thereafter, being harassed by the frustrations of his own sins, anartas, and lust, he pursues liberation. Notice here he mentioned the three proclivities. Right? Because that then will throw in either your yoga there, or it will throw in Buddhism, right? Because Buddhism is then what one turns to when karma and jnana don't go well for you. Because jnana, in one sense, it's the light, you exist. But it's undifferentiated Brahman, so it's just happiness. You know, voidism means there's nothing, you don't exist. You understand? So when that doesn't work for you, then you go to this. So that takes... But here, notice endless pursuit of religiosity, material wealth, and sense gratification. You know, dharma, artha, and kama. When that there's a problem there, then he's going to turn to moksha. Right? But now here is that from this we can see is that therefore the dharma, artha, kama, and moksha that are delineated in the Bhagavatam is different from this form that's being described here. Right? What makes the difference? The difference will be the mentality. One is that you're not turned away from Krishna. You don't see it separate from Krishna. You see it connected to Krishna. Then it's not actually called dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. It's just called devotional service. Does that make sense? Like we're studying about Kardama Muni. It's already established that he's a Paramahamsa. Right? This is in the first stage. He's marrying Swayambhuva Manu's daughter. Right? So that means it's not happening in later ages. Because Brahma, he expands his sons. Kardama is one of the mind sons. And then he's got to get married to have, you know, how you say, expand the universe. Right? So that means right in the beginning, we're talking about basically the first, you know, how you say, yuga that's going on. Right? Does that make sense? The first day of Brahma. So in that time, then we see is that, but he's dealing with the underlying... how he says, anyavilasita. He's dealing with this underlying principle of sense enjoyment, that I'm the controller and enjoyer. Though he knows Krishna is, but there's this underlying there, right? Says, you know, but this residue of practice of these three paths. So we see he's taking up, he's getting married, he's having children, right? And amazingly enough, he's using same processes that people use today, right? So that whole thing then remains is then how is that different than what's being described here? Because we see at the end of it, one, he has God for his son, and two, is he, you know, is able to leave all material attachment and go back to Godhead. And how did he do that? He did that. What does it focus on? It doesn't talk too much about him as a brahmachari, and you won't hear anything about him after he took sannyas. Right, so we're talking about he's perfecting his life as a grihastha. Does that make sense? So that would mean is that there's a difference in this karma, dharma, artha, and kama, and moksha than what is talked about by the non-devotees. It's the same verses, the same shastras, but it's actually a different path. It looks exactly the same. You know what I'm saying? So that's what is here is we have to be able to distinguish this. We have to be able to tell that the same activity used for Krishna gives one effect. Same activity not used for Krishna gives you a different effect. So if it's Vedic, it's not used for Krishna, you'll get a pious result. Right? But if it's modern, it's not used for Krishna, you're going to get a modern result. Right? Does that make sense? So the whole point is what makes the distinction in all activities is using it for Krishna. And so what we're trying to, define here is actually, is it for Krishna when we're acting? Right? Because otherwise, then Prabhu was mentioning his point, is that we can delude ourselves. You know, we know that, okay, I have this idea, I can ask this person, he'll support me on it. Well, if I ask that one, he'll tell me no. So we can cheat ourselves. So the thing is to be real and actually not do that. Does that make sense? So that is self-realization. To be able to discern. Be able to tell that the same activity done in the right consciousness is Krishna consciousness. The same activity done not in the right consciousness is not Krishna consciousness. Maybe pious, maybe nice. Of course, chanting is a whole different thing. We're talking about our day-to-day activities. Does that make sense? We have to be able to distinguish these. That's why there's so much elaborate detail given in the shastras so we can tell, right? That's why Kapila Muni's philosophy is very important, because of the Shankhya, it tells you exactly what is the sense, what is the sense object, what is the sense itself. You know how you say it? Means how you say it. You have the nose, you have the smell, means the thing that is smelled, right? So the sense and the sense object, but then you have the concept of smell itself. Right? So right there you have, that's 3, 5 times 5, that's 15. Right? Then you have, that's to do with the knowledge acquiring senses. Then you have the other senses, the working senses. So that's 5 more. That's 20. Right? And then you add in the mind, intelligence, and false ego, and polluted consciousness. And there you have it. That's everything. If you understand this, then you're not in the material world. You don't understand it, you are here. Right? Unless, of course, you can just jump over all this and just remember Krishna. Right? So that's the point that's being made. The gopis, he says, they weren't great philosophers, they were not great renunciates. They just, all they cared about was Krishna and doing everything for Krishna. Therefore, they just, you know, cross over this whole thing and get to there. So that's the best thing. If that didn't happen, then you try the Pancharatra. That will regulate your life, everything around the deity, everything connected to the deity. You know, everything in glorification of the deity, right? So all the preaching, everything like that. But all there is basically that kind of lifestyle, right? Not, then the Vedic brings in everything else, right? That's then where all the things get a little tricky. Because otherwise we know Artik, okay, is for Krishna, right? We're not going to, you know, offer Artik to someone else, right? But the thing is you have to say nice things to the deity. You also have to say nice things to your wife. So then what makes those nice things that you say to your wife different from, the next man? Right? So if you're saying it simply because, only because if I say that, I'll get a good result, then that's karma. Right? And so depending upon what method of nice speech you use, you'll get different kinds of results. Now, if following Shastra, you see that there it says that the husband's supposed to deal very nicely and everything with the wife. So based on that, you're dealing nicely and speaking sweetly. So then that would mean that it's now you're recognizing Vedic, you're following it, so now it will be pious. Right, so not only will you get a good result from the interaction with the wife, but there'll be something more on top of that because you followed Shastra. Right? Now you take it a step further and, okay, now you're doing that, you're following, why are you following Shastra? Right? Because you know, you've accepted that following the Vedas is going to give me a better material result than not following the Vedas. Okay, so that's a pious person. Okay, but if you're doing, because Krishna's is the origin of the Shastra, right? So therefore, this is how Krishna wants the living entity to interact, right? Does that make sense? That's human life. That's progressive life. So therefore, then I'm doing it because the Shastras say, because it's my duty, right? And at this point, then many people start freaking out, you know, raising their hands, standing up, and all that. But then it's not real. But the thing is since when is the illusion of the material world real? That's the first question. Moving on from that, then the point is drama is not real. Right? Movies are not real. But if there's a good drama, everyone appreciates. Why? Because it actually evokes all the different emotions and all that that you would want to evoke in that real situation if it was there. So you know what I'm saying? If you happen to be in the room when King Lear just figured out what happened, you know, you would probably be moved as much as if you had a very good actor who was pretending that he was King Lear. You understand? So the point is what is it? So therefore, the committed, dedicated actor, he's doing it because he's an actor and this is what he's supposed to do. And he's committed to that principle. Therefore, everyone appreciates. Same with a good musician or good anything. So that means someone who is committed to their following their duties, they're going to do it better than anyone else. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, then it comes back. So then, okay, we were on this, these steps. So then you're doing it because this is your duty. Right? So it takes on that principle of naishkarmya. Now it starts to become dynamic. Because now it will free you from the material world. Right? Before, you're doing it because it's Vedic, it's the right thing to do, it's the religious thing to do, and by doing it, I'll get the best result. That's piety. Right? So you'll go to the heavenly planets, you'll get some nice facility here, now or in a future life, but it won't get you out of the material world. But doing it because you're supposed to do it, because that's the higher principle. That naishkarmya, that will then free you from the material creation. Right? So now we've seen dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Right? But then what we see, what makes the Bhagavad, because those are also very nice examples. But then the Bhagavatam, the examples that are given, take it beyond that. The Vedic literatures will give you all these nice examples. They will also throw in examples of devotees, but people may distinguish that or not. But the Bhagavatam then doesn't put in the other stories. It only puts in the devotional elements. So now you're performing, you have to perform your activity. You're doing it according to Shastra. You're doing it as your duty, like that. And you may even take the point of, okay, even to please the other person. So now it takes on that personal element. It's not dry, you know, element of dealing with Brahman. It's personal, but you're doing it to please Krishna. Right? Not that it's right, it's religious, God made it like this is what I'm supposed to do. That's nice. But more progressive, God made it like this, why did he make it like this? Because then we can interact. I'm not with God now in a form that I understand that is God. But all these things around me are very important. But I understand from the Shastra, all these things is actually Krishna's potency. Right? Therefore, I will interact with all these to please Krishna. Does that make sense? Like that. So you're performing the drama to please Krishna. Right? So if you're an actor, you're on the stage, and you're in the audience is Krishna, who are you doing, who the stage acting for? So to say, no, unless I'm down in the audience and there, you know, rubbing shoulders with Krishna, that's not, no. You do the drama nicely because Krishna has made this, you know, has given the concept, right? And you're doing that to please him. Then it becomes devotional service. Does that make sense? It becomes progressive, right? So the thing itself, the drama itself may not be exactly devotional service, but that you're doing it to please Krishna, that element is devotional service. That will take you forward. Right? Because that increases, then you get to the spiritual platform, where in your natural surup, then you're going to perform drama again. But that drama is also to please Krishna, but you're dealing with much better, you know, ingredients. The costumes are eternal, the scenery is eternal, you know, the lines are eternal. You know, it's a much better play. Right? And this one, then Krishna will come and interact. So it becomes, how you say, you know, audience participation, yes, and all that. See, nothing new, huh? You thought this is the new thing, you know, that artists come up with artist participation and, you know, our living theater, we just sit down here and, you know, put glass in our house and everyone can just watch us do whatever we want and all that. But this living theater is actually, it's called the spiritual realm, like that. But over here, it's a little bit more, less desirable. Does that make some sense? Right? You catch this? So this is what's being propounded by the Vedic literatures. All this other stuff is not what it's for. Right? It's not for karma, it's not for jnana, it's not for all this piety, impiety, it's not for religion, it's not for morality, it's not for sense gratification, it's not for liberation. It's actually just to please Krishna. You do play the drama to please Krishna. Because it's dealing with dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, you'll get all those. But the real benefit is you'll get Krishna. That's the real point. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So, okay. That's why we simultaneously can establish, like in that purport, Prabhupada was establishing that basically you need to follow the Vedic culture. And another purport is saying that unless you follow actually the Vedic literatures, there is no question of naishkarmya. Right? So we say, oh, well, it doesn't matter. We're doing it for Krishna, but Prabhupada has a different idea. Unless you're following what's coming down from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, the principles that they're establishing, you're doing it for yourself. Right? But it's connected to Krishna, so it's Sakam Karma Yoga, which is good. But don't claim you're following Nishkam Karma Yoga. That can only follow if the Vedic principles are being attained. Unless you understand the principle, how are you going to attain it? Does that make sense? You know, you have to clean. So cleanliness is the principle. Okay, understanding that, now whether you use, you know, an old dhoti or whether you go out and buy one of these nice little, you know, green spongy things. You know, one you could say is old, is Vedic, you know, you've used an old dhoti, it's a rag, and the other thing is something modern, but you've understood the principle of cleanliness. Then it's Yukta Vairagya. But if you think, oh, only with the little green thing can you make things clean, and if you use a dhoti, you can't actually get it clean because it's the detail that's important. It's not naishkarmya. Because otherwise, why are you attached to the green spongy thing? You know, and the rag, oh, the rag's disgusting. Does that make sense? So that is then why we can establish these points and we can throw them out. We establish them if they're in connection to Krishna, which is their actual purpose. But if it's not seen in connection with Krishna, we throw it out because that's not actually what it's for. Just like the artik. The artik's meant for Krishna. But if someone says, well, I want to do artik to Mahakali, then we'll say, well, that's bogus. And they'll say, what do you mean? The artik is there. Is it bona fide? Or if we think, oh, because someone's doing artik to Kali and that's bogus, therefore all artiks are bogus and we don't need to do artiks. You understand? So that's niyamagraha. You don't understand, you throw it out, or you stick to it. No, artiks have to be done. Doesn't matter to who. This artik has to happen. You know, hey, there's a dog. Hey, come on. You know, it's like that. So then you've missed the point. The point's not the artik. The point's not doing the artik. The point is that the artik's done for Krishna. That's why artiks are created. Right, so all the Vedic literature is only created to serve Krishna. There's no other reason. There's not another reason. But misunderstanding that and becoming here, how you say, intoxicated by immediate sensual pleasures, then people make the mistake. Okay, so we'll end here. But just one question is that because we're not running the Mahabharata class in the morning, the 6 to 7. And we're trying to do some curriculum work during this time until we start again. Would everyone be comfortable if this class, instead of doing it 4 to 5 in the afternoon, if we did it from 6 to 7 in the morning? And then 7 to 8, we do our regular class? Would that work for everybody? Anyone it wouldn't work for? Okay, so then we'll continue, we'll do this tomorrow. So 6 to 7, we'll do this class, and then 7 to 8 will be the regular where we have at that time. Because some people, means many people come to the morning class, and it seems to be it's a certain specific group only comes to the afternoon. So that's why it's like that. So, yeah? Okay, so we'll see you tomorrow then. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. Oh, that's your one.